On the line, we have Chris Hansen of To Catch a Predator fame, who's currently funding his new project, Hansen vs. Predator, on Kickstarter. Visit HansenVsPredator.com for all the details. Chris, how's it going?
It's going really well. You know, it's exciting. One of the questions I'm asked most on social media is, you know, when are you going to do another Predator investigation? And so we started thinking about it, and with all the change in the landscape of the digital media and all the different ways that people can approach other people online, I thought it was time. And it was also time to let the people who, you know, are demanding it be a part of it. And this will allow me to have the creative ability and to control the content and do it the way I think it should be done.
And you brought awareness to the public in the infancy of the internet. Like, I don't think people, you probably don't get enough credit for that. I mean, like, nobody probably had any idea what their kids had access to.
Well, you know, it was interesting because when we started, I mean, we basically had decoys on chat rooms on AOL and Yahoo. And today, think about it. How many different ways are there to communicate online with Snapchat and Twitter and Craigslist and Backpage and Kick? And,
right.
You know, there are dozens and dozens of ways to communicate. So it's all different now. And plus, when we started, kids were communicating, people were communicating on desktops and laptops. And now your communication device is in your pocket. So it's a whole different world out there.
Yeah, and you know, you can probably up the creepy factor because I imagine now with, you know, voice and video and stuff, you can actually, it's probably more incriminating for you to get these people on tape saying the things. The only problem is, like, you reading the written transcripts was my favorite part of the show.
Well, we're still going to do that. I mean, at some point, no matter how technology has changed or, you know, it has changed at many different levels, from the communication on, you know, the social space and the digital space to, you know, the way we record and conduct the production of these investigations. But at the end of the day, it still comes down to me having, you know, the transcripts and having a discussion. Now, we may have technology now that can let us videotape, for instance, a person in his daily life before he agrees to show up. I mean, that exists, and that is why this series is going to be different from, you know, the previous one.
Well, Mike, too, I think you brought up
it. Still comes down to the confrontation, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. That's the best part.
I goofed up because I should have started off the interview with telling Chris to take a seat.
Oh, no.
I messed up big time.
Well, Mike, though, you brought up the fact that it brought awareness to people, like parents in general. But I think that even more important is bringing the awareness to the kids who are using this technology. I just don't think, since they've been born into this technology, that they really are aware of the dangers that could be posed online when they're using these, you know, when they're using the Skype talking to people that they don't know, or the Snapchat or texting. I don't think that they really understand what they're getting themselves into a lot of times.
No, I think you're exactly right. You know, my sons are 23 and 21, so they're sort of past that. But, you know, I kept a close eye on them when, you know, they were on chat rooms and doing interactive gaming. Today, it's a whole different deal. You know, as you said, kids are out there chatting, and I think what the original series did was to create a dialogue and raise awareness that didn't exist before, and that's what we're out to do again at a whole different level because technology has changed so much in the last few years.
Chris, I got a great idea. You're going to love this. Have you ever considered doing a flipped version where you meet up with kids that you solicit online and scold them for being tricked, and they have like a mascot, like a McGruff the Crime Dog or like the Forest Fire Bear? Like,
you know, to be very honest with you, that's an incredibly great idea, and I've talked about it with my producers over the years, and the only problem with that is it is hard for me to justify doing it because I can't find a way to not, like, victimize young people. And I would never do that just for a television moment.
Right,
I mean,
right,
I'll
yeah,
go
yeah.
after a guy. You see what I'm saying? So the reverse
thing. I think that's what Pete Townsend got in
trouble. Look, it's a legitimate idea, and it's great, and we've talked about it, but I can't get my arms around a way to do it in which we don't, like punish a young person and make them feel bad about themselves. I'm just not going to do that.
I would be completely behind trying to make that iconic mascot, though, that, you know, there is
McGruff the Crime Dog. No, I think the mascot's a great idea. Right. I think it's all great. And people have done that very successfully across the country. I'm just saying that, you know, I've seen stories, you know, on the network where they, you know, they snare kids into kind of a funny situation and they shame them in a way that they don't deserve. Whereas an adult who's coming to meet a child for sex, and to commit a crime, I have no problem with them being shamed or prosecuted, you know, or put on television. But it's a funky situation when you turn it around. And I just never figured out a way to do it in a way that I'm comfortable.
Which makes sense. I'm the father of a 6-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old son.
Well, so then you know.
I'm not to that point yet, obviously. You know, they're discovering technology, and mostly it's playing on grandma's iPad to play the Dora the Explorer games. But some point, they're going to be there. And to be able to open up that dialogue is very important because, I mean, like you said, it's at the palm of their hands now. So you don't have to be in the house at the desktop computer, which is in the living room. Now, like, you can be at school or between classes where you can be chatting with these people.
I give speeches all the time, you know, to police groups, to, you know, students, teachers, and you know, I always get the parent who says, well, you know, I'm just not going to allow internet in my house because I'm going to protect my daughters. Well, you know, guess what? That's fine, and that's your personal decision, and I respect that. But the reality is this. Those kids are going to get on the internet, on their smartphones. They're going to get on it in their friend's house, at the public library, at the Starbucks. Most towns are wired, you know, from front to back. So they're going to have access to it. So instead of just saying, you know, we're going to have a zero-tolerance policy and you can't do it, the best way to protect your children is to understand how a predator thinks and to educate them so they don't fall into the trap. And that's the whole theory behind this show, is that when I, you know, anybody can jump out of the bushes and make somebody run away. That's easy. The biggest challenge for me has always been, how do I get these guys to sit down and let me get in their minds for 10, 15, 20 minutes and put that on TV and let people see it so they understand how this happens? And the better you know how a predator's mind work, whether it's a sexual predator targeting children or a financial predator targeting your parent or your grandparent, once you understand that, you can better protect the potential victim. And that's what it's all about.
So from all your years of doing this, how does a predator's mind work?
I think there are three different groups. it's a broad question, but it's something I've given a lot of thought to.
Right.
And quite honestly, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist, so I'm not qualified to speak to it on a clinical level, but I can tell you from my basic experience and having interviewed some 300 of these guys, you know, over the years and getting ready to do it again.
300?
I think they break down into 300.
Jeez.
And I think they break down into three different categories. There's the hardcore sexual offender who would be doing this with or without the internet. These guys can't be fixed. There's a middle group that is active in this, you know, space, who probably wouldn't be doing it without the internet, without the access, the anonymity, and, you know, the ability to say things to people that they wouldn't say in person. And those guys could be dangerous, so they have to be monitored, and we've seen a lot of that. And then there's this third group that's, you know, they're in their young 20s, they're socially awkward, and they'll take advantage of a girl who's 14 and try to hook up and do something. And those are the guys who can probably get a rap on the hand and say, look, if you do it again, you're going to jail. And they'll never do it again. So what we want as a society is a, you know, one size fix that will, you know, end the problem. And it's not that way. You know, we have not come to terms in society with dealing with sexual predators and sexual predation. And we need to do that because until we, you know, stop the demand, we're not going to stop the problem.
You could always have a thing on the show where you teach parents how to block certain websites on computers.
Like chats and things like that. I guess child-proofing things. But eventually, you know, they'll find a way.
As a parent, though, if you make something off limits, if you say something is,
that makes it that
you can't do it,
appealing.
That's immediately what they're going to gravitate towards.
It's forbidden food. It's just like, mm-hmm. you know, kids at college. You know, when I was in college, you could have a beer at 18, and now you can't. It's 21, and so there's no mechanism for a responsible kid to go, you know, have a beer at 19 years old. And it's the same thing here. People want to say, okay, the internet is forbidden. It's not forbidden. It's out there. It's ubiquitous. So you need to educate. You need to tell kids, age appropriately, when they're young, look, there are adults out there who will try to trick you. And kids will relate to that. You could also say, by the way, you shouldn't talk to anybody online who you don't know in real life. Because the person who comes online, who looks like a cute 14-year-old girl, 14-year-old boy, could be a fat 60-year-old in his basement in his underwear surrounded by pizza boxes trying to trick you. And I think if you're that graphic about it, and as crude as that may sound, I think that gets kids' attention.
And, you know, you've kind of, like, become, like, the poster boy for this cause. I mean, like, you know, you've become, like, synonymous with this topic. And so I imagine you get recognized, like, when you go to the grocery store. Like, are people trying to pay attention to who you're looking at? And I guess what I'm asking is it really weird to be you?
Well, it's you know, I get asked all the time. You know, people come up and say, you know, you are you Chris Hansen? I said, well, I get that all the time. They said, does it piss you off? I said, well, sometimes. But I've been on television since I was 21 years old, and so I get it, and it's part of being a public figure. And so you have to accept that going in. But yes, I mean, I was shooting a story today for my new Discovery show. It's a crime investigative show, and, you know, we got stopped several times, and that's part of the deal.
Killer Instinct, correct? So,
well, Killer Instinct, right, exactly. And I didn't expect, you know, Predator to be what it was. I was happy just doing, you know, crime and investigative stories for Daylight NBC, and it became something bigger than anybody expected. So fine, I'll take that, and I'll take the responsibility of you know, giving speeches and doing things and trying to, you know, educate people to protect children. And that's why we wanted to take this thing to the next level, because, you know, we did a lot of these for NBC and Dateline, and you know, they continued in reruns and expanded versions. But I think it's time to really get back out there and do this in a meaningful way. And that's why we went to the Kickstarter space, because it allows us the creative ability, the independence, and the ability to distribute it in a way that's never been done before. So our plan is to go out and do investigations, initially do stories that will be on, you know, the internet, distributed digitally, and then repackage them for broadcast. So we'll reach people in two different ways. I think that's the way of the future, whatever your content is.
So are you talking about like YouTube or Netflix, or you haven't really decided?
Well, you know, listen, we're in discussions with a lot of people on the digital space. And, you know, I think once we finish the first investigation, we'll know where we're going with it, and we'll establish a metric for distribution. And again, this is the business part of it. And, you know, I'm really into the content part of it, because I think it's important. I mean, I have a partner who deals with the business part of it. I just want to go do stories and create content that impact people, educate people, and protect people.
I want to say too that the digital platforms, you know, you're in discussions and everything, but to have these available on demand to where a family can sit down and say, you know, listen to this is really important. Let's sit down for the half hour, let's watch this and see how important it is for you to really make informed decisions about what you're doing online. I think to be able to offer that in an on-demand capacity is probably, you know, the best course of action. You're right to take advantage of the new digital media with it.
I think you hit it right on the head. I think that in the average investigation, you figure that between 19 and 24 guys are going to walk in the door. So that's 19 to 24 episodes that we'll do digitally that are 3 to 4 minutes, because, as you guys know all too well, that's the, you know, appetite. That's what people get. And then we repackage them into, you know, half hour episodes for whether it's, you know, Discovery or Netflix or whoever ends up being a partner with us. I just think it's a continuing education program, and it's going to keep people on their game. It's going to keep the bad guys, you know, off balance, and I think it'd be irresponsible not to do it, quite honestly.
I imagine that just knowing that you're out there again will probably deter some people, right?
I think if I was
a predator, I'm thinking Chris Hansen's doing a show again, I think twice before I take that lemonade. You know,
But you know, you gotta remember that we did this for, you know, many years. 6-7 years, and, you know, got to the point where it went from guys walking in and not knowing whether I'm a cop, the mad dad, or whatever.
to saying, oh, you're Chris Hansen.
Well, exactly. I mean, we're at the Jersey Shore. I walk out, and the guy is, you know, pouring his marijuana out on the countertop to show the decoy, and it's time to go in, and I walk out. And before I can say a word, he says, oh, you're Chris Hansen. I said, well, how did you know that? He said, well, I watch it all the time. I never miss an episode. When I do, I download it from the Internet.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, dude, do you even get the trouble that you're in? You know, I mean, it was amazing. So
I guess
it's going to be fascinating to get back out there. And, you know, obviously, you know, I've been doing a lot of other investigations. And, you know, the funny part is, you know, obviously I'm best known for that particular series. But it's never been more than 20% of what I've done in the network space. But it has resonated with people, and it became, you know, sort of iconic. I mean, you know, I'd always tell the story, you know, my boys who, you know, could give a rat's ass about their father being on television,
right,
because he's always been on television. That's just how he makes a living. You know, when South Park did a parody, suddenly I had street cred. Suddenly I was cool. You know, I was a big deal, you know.
I think I vaguely remember that. That was a long time ago, but I do remember that South Park episode.
Le Petit Tourette. Yes, it was quite something. my agent texted me. I was on the West Coast, and he was on the East Coast. He said, South Park is doing it tonight. I said, well, that's interesting. How's it going? He said, it was pretty funny. He says, it's taken a dark turn.
I remember a couple of months ago, I read a book by B.J. Novak. Do you know who B.J. Novak is?
Yes, oh, absolutely. Yeah,
did you read the chapter in the book about you?
I did. That's pretty funny.
it was great. I think, I believe it was a fictional story about Chris Hansen,
right,
taking his daughters to a One Direction concert.
Yes, exactly.
And how uncomfortable he would make everyone, because everybody wouldn't, like, be able to get into the concert because they'd be thinking that Chris Hansen was looking at them and thinking they were weird for being into underage boys. It was great. It was funny. But
well, even Catch a Predator was, you know, such a small part of your broadcasting career, since you, like you said, you've been doing it for so long. It's got to be pretty great to be synonymous with a cause that resonates with so many people, and that you can have a very successful Kickstarter campaign. I mean, you have 10 days to go and you're at, you know, what, you're just shy of 20,000 of your goal. I mean, it's a large amount of money.
We'll be fine. Yeah, we'll be fine. And that's going to be great. And people have been very generous and very supportive. And you know, a lot of people, you know, will get involved in the last 10 days.
When do you start getting nervous, Chris? You're not nervous at all?
No, I'm not nervous at all, because I know we're going to make it, and I know people out there who care about it, and we also have branded sponsors, and, you know, if we make the goal, you know, whatever we have to kick in above and beyond, we'll do it. We're committed to do it. And what this has done is it's allowed, you know, our, really organic fan base, if you will, to be involved in it at a level that people care about. And that's the magic of it. That's the magic of the crowdfunding, is it allows people to have a piece of it. It allows me to create a metric for the future to continue to do it, because this way I'll know how we can both distribute digitally and repackage for broadcast. And that ensures the profitability of doing the digital thing, which is important, which is, I think, how people digest things now, but isn't always profitable. So if we have that plus the broadcast, one pays for the other, and everybody gets it. So some people are going to get it for free, some people are going to pay, and companies are going to pay, but everybody's going to get the content. And I think at the end of the day, everybody getting the content is the most important thing. So I'm willing to go stretch and to do things in a different creative way to ensure that it happens.
Well, I'm excited to see what comes out. I appreciate you doing this. HansenVersusPredator.com is the website. Go donate now. Chris isn't nervous, but I'm nervous. So
we're going to be just fine. I want you to be calm, unless you show up in one of my kitchens. You don't need to be nervous.
I want to see this get made. I'm excited to see it. Chris,
we're going to do it. Don't worry. We're going to make it happen.
I appreciate what
you're doing here, Chris.
All right, guys, thanks for having me on, and you guys have a wonderful night, and I appreciate it very much.